Okay, let's talk about something taboo for a second. Getting pregnant, baby making. It isn't simple. There's a serious lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant, and it's very confusing because we spend our lives trying to prevent unwanted pregnancy, but then when you do want to conceive, there's a whole new lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby, with a set of solutions for everything from egg and sperm health to ovulation tracking to conception aid. Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that are innovative, easy to use, and accessible. From ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits, Frida's revolutionizing the conception aid game with the at-home insemination kit, a modern, effective solution to the turkey baster. This is baby making simplified. You can discover Frida Fertility products on Amazon, Target, and select CVS near you.
This is Sounds Like a Cult, a show about the modern day cults we all follow.
I'm Issa Medina, a comedian and documentarian.
And I'm Amanda Montell, an author and linguist.
This week's cult is the royal family, and we're going to analyze every culty corner of it to try and answer the big question.
This group sounds like a cult, but is it really? Issa, you don't particularly strike me as someone who's like obsessed with British royalty. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, no, I don't really care for them. I never think about them.
No, I don't think about the royal family either. But you do watch The Crown, don't you?
I didn't choose to watch The Crown. The Crown chose me. It was kind of like a late quarantine decision that was made for me. I really just was out of content.
I see.
It kept getting suggested to me and I was like, all right.
The algorithm is the ultimate cult leader. Yeah. That's what I always say. I literally never paid attention to the royal family at all. I just always thought that the royal family was like the British version of the Kardashians, you
know? Exactly.
Make it old school, slap a crown on them.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you said the royal family is the British version of the Kardashians.
I hate myself.
It should be backwards. Everyone says that like the Kardashians are like the royal version of Americans.
Oh my God. Well, that just shows how like US-centric my thinking is. But I mean, I know from my linguistics knowledge that Americans fetishize British culture because we have mommy issues in the way that colonized countries tend to have for their motherlands.
Is that why I think Spanish accents from Spain are sexy? Because I'm Colombian.
100%. It's like
the Spanish colonized.
No, that is totally like it's a good analogy because a British accent is exotic, but not too exotic in quotes. But also, like, it's the accent of our motherland, and we literally have mommy issues as, like, a colonized country, so that's why we think British accents are sexy.
Well, I'll be talking about this in therapy. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, like, I totally did think that the royal family was just, like, another famous family until I watched the Meghan Markle interview with Oprah. And then I was like, oh, huh. This sounds like an interview with a cult survivor.
Yeah.
So a little bit of background for those who did not catch the Meghan Markle interview. Where were you? What rock were you under? Essentially, Prince Harry's wife, Meghan Markle, Duchess of Sussex, I think is her title. This was basically her tell-all that aired on CBS talking about just the clusterfuck of an experience that she'd had as a member of the royal family for 18 months as an American coming into the situation, and how the media was so incredibly vitriolic towards her and basically forced her to deal with some really dark mental health demons and pushed her to a point where she and Harry decided to leave the royal family for her mental health and for the health and safety of her children, who are mixed race, which is not exactly accepted in the royal family, apparently.
I watched it too, and my first thought was, of course, this is horrible and I cannot imagine what she's going through. But my second thought was, okay, but you're kind of like a bajillionaire. You are in very rich circles and you're a famous actress. Like, why can't you just leave?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have resources. And especially if her husband was like supportive of her, which it seems he was, ultimately they did leave, but they did it in a very politically correct way, which they didn't have to do.
Yeah. No, that is a completely fair point. I think when analyzing the cult of the royal family, we just have to like accept a few realities that make it not on the same level as even the cult of SoulCycle or the cult of like some new age Instagram guru. Because first of all, the royal family is not that much of a public threat, seeing as like marrying a prince isn't an opportunity that very many people are going to get.
Yeah. So. Oh, you're a princess?
So it's like, you know, we don't need to be constantly looking over our shoulder, scared that we're going to get inducted into the cult of the royal family.
Oh, yeah. That's how you mean it. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, princes are just following me all over town. It's getting creepy.
So I'm just like, okay, not all of us are particularly at risk of ending up in a Meghan Markle situation. And also, like you
my
were saying,
my cheekbones are not qualified for falling into the cult of becoming a princess.
No, I think you have lovely
oh,
cheekbones.
Oh, thank you. You have better cheekbones.
I haven't really thought about my cheekbones much, which I guess means that they're fine. Because yeah. If you're not insecure about it, then...
I've never thought about them until I watched this Meghan Markle interview. I was like, damn, girl, you got some nice cheekbones.
Damn! The cult of cheekbones. But then, like you were saying, you know, you cannot really compare, say, like, a bare bones compound in the woods when you have, like, absolutely no family or money on the outside to shacking up in a literal palace.
But I do think you can have everything you physically need and still be in like a psychologically dangerous cult-like situation.
Yeah, I think it's important to also talk about, and I know you don't like to use this word because you think it's like not real, but the brainwashing.
Uh-huh.
And when you saw how Meghan talked about it in the interview, she kind of got brainwashed to think that she had to be politically correct.
Yeah,
you know, that's also her personality. She's always been someone who was like
very poised,
very very poised, and I don't think she like wanted to leave with any bad relationships.
Yeah.
But then you could tell she was like battling with it because mm-hmm. she wanted to leave and she also felt like she couldn't because of the mental.
Oh, for sure. There was like psychological pressures and cognitive dissonance up the wazoo. But to clarify, I don't regard brainwashing as some sort of slur. Like, it's not like I hate the word. It's just that brainwashing is a metaphor and sometimes it's used to morally divide us, you know,
yeah.
because it's the pseudoscientific concept that gives people this armchair therapist eclat where they're like, oh, well, you're just brainwashed, you know, as a way to make them feel like they're superior and you're in a cult.
Yeah, but it's not like, oh, your brain is swiped clean.
It's not
and
that
you move.
But that's what people think happens. It's like you mind-controlled minion, you're brainwashed. But really what's going on are these methods of conditioning and coercion. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're really talking about.
And they started conditioning her since she started dating Harry.
Yeah. It is true that there are hella culty red flags when you look at the way that the monarchy behaves. And when you look at a cult, you see things like false promises, secrecy, deception. And in the Meghan Markle interview, she was saying all these things.
First of all, like how they create this really sunny portrait of what life there is going to be like.
And then you get there and it ends up being the complete polar opposite. And so you feel deceived. And this, I think, speaks to the conditioning that probably a lot of British people undergo just growing up in the United Kingdom. Like, you're conditioned to think that the royal family is this sort of ideal.
Yeah.
And that is not me coming for British people, by the way. I mean, I probably don't even need to state that no one is under more cultish conditioning than Americans, right? Like, the whole thesis of this podcast is that all of us are under cunt. I mistype cult as cunt all the time, but I think this is the first time I've ever misspoken it. Anyway, the thesis of our podcast is that we are all under some degree of cult-like influence just because of the institutions and the affiliations that we're a part of that we take for granted. It just so happens to be that we're talking about something British this week, but
I think when Meghan sort of like infiltrated, the reason why the press came down on her so hard was she was just about to say that.
I think that the reason the press came down on her, and I think the reason the royal family didn't defend her when the press was after her, is because they wanted to diminish her independence, diminish her strength, and kind of
mind fuck her
into thinking you aren't as worthy as us, so you better listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was to prove a point. Like, you came in here not knowing how to curtsy.
Yeah.
You came in here not caring about us as like godlike, because that's what the crown is, right? They're like the descendants of God.
Pretty much.
And she just saw them as fellow celebrities. Because like she said, she grew up in LA and she was like, I'm famous, you're famous, let's all be friends.
Yeah, that is such a good point. They probably felt threatened by her, honestly.
Yeah.
They wouldn't come to her defense because they were like, she doesn't respect us. She doesn't like worship us the way that we need to be worshipped.
And so in that way, they kind of wanted her to be humbled.
But it totally backfired.
Yeah, because she's a strong, independent woman.
Totally.
They milked every bureaucratic trick available to them, though, like to keep her in their clutches. I just think they did so much to gaslight her and make her feel like any misery she felt as a part of the royal family was all in her head, and that they were doing everything that they could to help her when they really weren't, you know?
Yeah. I thought of that when I heard Meghan talk about the institution, because it's not this one person. It's not like the queen was the bitch to her alone, or
which it sounds like she wasn't at all. It sounds like it was this really nebulous other party that she wouldn't even name in the interview. Basically, like the whole climax of the interview, where I guess there were a couple of them. One, she revealed that at one point the media was bullying her so hardcore that she started to develop suicidal ideation. And when she went to the institution, again, whatever that means, it's a person or a group of people, I don't even know, to try and seek mental health help, they wouldn't let her because of the way it would look. And she couldn't escape because they'd literally taken her passport, her keys, her driver's license. And that was the cultiest part to me, because there was no exit strategy for her.
After the break, we're going to hear from Afia Adam, a London-based journalist who has extensively covered the royal family. She's going to give us a qualified perspective on what this fancy British cult is all about. I was out of town when we recorded the interview, so Amanda is going to take this one solo.
Okay, let's talk about something taboo for a second. Getting pregnant, baby making. It isn't simple. There's a serious lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant, and it's very confusing because we spend our lives trying to prevent unwanted pregnancy, but then when you do want to conceive, there's a whole new lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby, with a set of solutions for everything from egg and sperm health to ovulation tracking to conception aid. Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that are innovative, easy to use, and accessible. From ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits, Frida's revolutionizing the conception aid game with the at-home insemination kit, a modern, effective solution to the turkey baster. This is baby making simplified. You can discover Frida Fertility products on Amazon, Target, and select CVS near you.
I am so giddy to tell you about my absolute favorite iPhone game of late. It's called June's Journey. If you like mystery games that are really easy to play and very aesthetic to look at, then you have got to check this one out. June's Journey is basically a hidden object mystery game where you're solving this detective story centering on a protagonist named June, who's living in the 1920s, so very glamorous. She has to travel back to her family's island estate to solve the mystery of who murdered her sister. And my favorite part of the game is that as you find these different clues and help solve the crime, you get to decorate the island estate with various pieces of furniture and other accoutrements. It is so relaxing to play when you kind of just need to switch off your brain. And I'm pretty bad at iPhone games and video games in general, and I can still enjoy it. So I really think you'll love it. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
So first, I would just love if you could introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yes. So my name is Afia Adom, and I am a journalist, a broadcaster, and I guess a royal commentator. And I'm based in London in the United Kingdom.
Lovely. So Issa and I were trying to figure out exactly like who in the royal family makes the decisions. And it's oddly hard to find out. To the best of your ability, could you explain the internal structure of the royal family, like how it's set up and who in the whole organization actually has decision-making power?
A really good question, and I wish I could explain the internal structure of the royal family, but I don't even think the royal family could explain the internal structure of the royal family. And that's why it's called the firm, that's why it's referred to as the firm, because I think there is a lot of people who make decisions with the blood relatives of the royal family. I think there's a lot of handlers, you know, people that work in and around. You know, when Meghan Markle was interviewed by Oprah Winfrey, she talked about going to HR. And I remember thinking, like, the royal family has a human resources department. That's mental to me. We know that obviously the Queen is the head of the family, is the chief decision maker. I think at the moment, Prince Charles and Prince William have probably stepped up as well since the death of Prince Philip. But in terms of who's really, you know, in charge, who knows?
Right. So there's no one person at the top or some sort of power nucleus who has the ability to veto something, anything.
Well, I mean, the Queen is the Queen, right? So she can veto absolutely anything if she really wants to. But it's if she really deems it that important, and if she feels that it's something she really, you know, should get involved in, because she's involved in the state opening of parliament. She does have an audience with whichever prime minister is in charge, and the Queen and the King before her have had that since the beginning of time. And that is something that will continue. But, you know, she's more of a sounding board. She doesn't necessarily make political decisions or make decisions that can affect the country in that way. But if she wanted to, she could. You know, it's a kind of strange one that she is a figurehead that has all this power, but doesn't necessarily wield it all the time.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, because a lot of Americans, including me and Issa, and as it seems Meghan Markle when she first married into the family, grow up thinking of the royal family as basically just like the Kardashians, you know, like just another celebrity family. But clearly the vibe is far different, which I suppose makes a world of sense considering its history. You did this a bit, but I was wondering if you could expand on painting a picture of how much unquestioned power the monarchy has exactly, and like for what? Just upholding tradition? I'm trying to get a sense of like how much power they wield as a firm.
Yes. Yes. So of course, the Commonwealth, you know, that's really a huge part of what the royal family is all about. The Commonwealth is not as big as it was, but back in the day, you know, the royal family were the figurehead of that in a way, and helped rule so many countries, including Ghana, where my DNA is originally from. So in terms of what the royal family does and what its role is at the moment, you know, they're a massive tourist draw. People come to the UK to go to Buckingham Palace and to go to Windsor Castle and to go to Kensington Palace and see all these places where the royal family live. And in terms of power, I mean, they do a heck of a lot of charity work. Let's, you know, give them that credit. Patronages of so many charities up and down the country, and living this life of public service. That's what they talk about a lot. And that is, you know, down to their charity work. Through this pandemic, we've seen a lot of Kate and William supporting NHS workers, healthcare workers. This is kind of the service that they do.
It makes a lot of sense, and it certainly seems like they do a lot of good for the world. I wonder how it feels to be, you know, born into it, because it seems like the standards for their life have been set. It's hard to feel sad for someone born a royal, but I do empathize with the sort of lack of freedom maybe that comes with just so much public and internal responsibility.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something that I can kind of, I mean, I was not born into the royal family, but, you know, I can understand how someone would feel that they don't necessarily have as much liberty as you and I would. You know, it's not like Prince Harry or Prince William's just going to pop down to the shops or is going to go out for a drink with his friends. And if they do, you know, that's so widely photographed and all the rest of it. So I guess there is some air of, I could see how that would bother you. But then, you know, if you look at all the privilege that they're born into, it's like, I don't know how much sympathy I have.
it's a trade-off. Yeah, I don't know how much sympathy I have either. So you had mentioned this term, the firm, which I think after the Meghan Markle interview, everybody was like, the firm, what does she mean, the firm? The other sort of business-like vague term that Meghan used was the institution. Do you have any insight on what the institution refers to?
So the institution is the royal family and all its interests and all its business. And I think the institution, the firm, are pretty much the same thing. So I believe, and nobody really knows apart from people within it, but I believe that the firm is made up of the royal family and then people like press secretaries, PR, courtiers, you know, ladies in waiting, all the people that are very close to the main Windsor family. Form this firm, form this institution. They are vault tight. They keep the secrets. They know where all the bodies are buried. And apparently they have an HR department. So yes, that is the firm, essentially, that encompasses the royal family and all their secret keepers, security, people like that.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting how in the Oprah Winfrey interview, Meghan kept using the word institution as if it referred to like one person or a group of people. And I was like, I wonder if she even knows.
This is the thing, is that I don't necessarily think she does know. I think there may be people within the firm that she doesn't know they're in the firm. And then there may be people that she thinks are in the firm are not. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know who has certain amounts of authority and who doesn't. You know, who has power and who doesn't, who's holding on to your passport and who's not. And then that's actually part of their appeal and part of how you keep up the secret, because nobody really knows who is who.
So it's kind of intentional to have these terms that everyone can use. And the terms are specific, but they don't actually mean
but
anything
vague
specific.
At the same time.
Yeah, it's quite clever. So as a member of the press, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the relationship between the royal family and the British press. Like, I've read that the relationship is sort of symbiotic or parasitic, if you choose to interpret it that way, and that the press like needs the royal family, but the royal family needs the press. And I'm just curious what your perspective is, and if you could shed some light on that relationship. And do you have any noteworthy experiences of your own from your own career?
Definitely the royal family need the press, and the press need the royal family. And there is certainly a lot of dealing going on to make sure that, you know, sometimes the press write nice stories about the royal family, and then therefore the press get invited to all these lovely events and holiday parties at Clarence House or Kensington Palace or wherever. The royal family are a little bit scared of the press. They are sometimes concerned about the stories that will come out, especially in the tabloids rather than the broadsheets, I think. But obviously the press know how much royal stories will sell pages. So yes, we need them as much as they need us. But they, I think, they're a bit more scared of us than we are of them, most certainly. And me personally, you know, I've met Prince Charles. I was invited to a reception honouring, you know, the Commonwealth countries that was honouring Ghana. And this was a few years ago, actually. And Prince Charles was like, oh, I know you work for us and so-and-so, you know, please do make sure that you're nice to me and I really like your outfit. And I was like, noted, I will write that down.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh, so they're kind of like sucking up a little bit.
Of course. And I'll send you a picture of me in that outfit.
Please do. Wow, that's pretty extraordinary. I wonder if... is the royal family like single-handedly upholding the tabloid business in the UK? Because the tabloid business is like all but dead in the US, I feel.
Yeah, I don't think they're single-handedly upholding it. I think they're certainly doing a good job of pushing sales. And, you know, we still have celebrities and footballers and all that salacious gossip. But to be honest, you know, over the pandemic, there hasn't been a lot of that. And actually, the things the tabloids have been writing about, Meghan's miscarriage, and Meghan getting pregnant again, and then, you know, the Oprah interview. So, yes, definitely, you know, the tabloids have gone crazy. There was some days in that week, you know, when the interview was on this Sunday, I think it was the 8th of March. And, you know, that week, the tabloids, some of them did 20 pages in the front of the paper on Meghan and Harry. I'm like, what more could you possibly, you could print the entire transcript of the interview and it wouldn't have been 20 pages. You know what I mean? So, like, how did we get here? I'd really like to know it.
I totally forgot that when Meghan stepped down, it was called Megxit, LOL.
Yes, it really was, wasn't it?
Okay, so one last question and then we'll play a game. There are so many like rituals and rites and traditions and ceremonies that go on with the royal family, like the royal orders and the titles and the appearances and everything. What do you think is the monarchy's cultiest ritual and what is it for?
Ooh. Do you know what? I think the cultiest one is probably, you know, when they have a baby and they usually have the baby, I think it is at the Princess Grace Hospital. And then whatever princess or whomever has given birth, and then they have to stand on the steps of the hospital with, like, you know, the placenta still dripping down their leg with a fresh blow dry. And like, here's my baby. What's that about? What is that about? That's horrible. Because I mean, I have a daughter, she's 9, and I tell you what, I was not walking after I gave birth to that child. Never mind, 4 hours later with a full blow dry and my nails done in a pretty blue dress. Hello, here's my child. That's weird.
Oh my god. That is bizarre.
That's weird. And Meghan was one of the first that was just like, it could never be me. I'm not doing it, and she didn't do it. And everyone, I mean, the press lost their minds beforehand, absolutely furious. It was like all the editors' mothers had been murdered on the same day. I was like, you guys need to relax. It is not reasonable to expect a woman who's just given birth to stand in front of 50 photographers who are shouting her name. How was the birth? It was brilliant. What is that about? Make it make sense.
Oh, that's a perfect answer. That's pretty good. Oh my goodness. All right, so now we're going to play a lighthearted game. It's called Culty Quotes. And it's essentially a game of who said that. So okay. I'm going to read you a series of 3 quotes. And you're going to have to guess whether or not the Queen said it or okay. a quote-unquote cult leader. Okay, so the first round is who said this culty quote? Was it the Queen or Gwyneth Paltrow?
Oh, Lord.
The quote is, Brits are far more intelligent and civilized than Americans.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
You are correct.
Yeah. That's so something she would say while trying to sell me a candle that smells like her vagina.
Nailed it. Nailed it. All right. This next round, who said this culty quote? The Queen or Charles Manson?
Oh my god.
The quote is,
oh god.
The quote is, like all the best families, we have our share of eccentricities.
Oh.
It's oddly hard.
I think it was Charles Manson.
That was the Queen.
Oh no. That's awkward. Sorry, Queenie.
It's hard out of context.
I can't, for some reason, I can't imagine her saying eccentricities. Like, I'm like, would she even say that? Would she acknowledge it? Well done. Well done on acknowledging it.
I mean, here's the thing about the internet is, like, the internet says that she said this, but, like, who
knows?
Whether
the farm will confirm or deny.
Yes, exactly. Okay, one last round. Who said this culty quote? The Queen or Donald Trump?
Oh, Lord.
The quote is, when life seems hard, the courageous do not lie down and accept defeat. Instead, they are all the more determined to struggle for a better future.
The Queen.
The Queen, you're right.
Yes!
Yes! Yes, you ended strong.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on Sounds Like a Cult. If someone wants to keep up with you and your work, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Afia the Scot, and I'll spell it for you. It's AfuaTheScot. You can find me there.
Oh, I love the way that British people say H. H.
Hey.
I love it.
I'm back, baby. So, Amanda, what do we think about the royal family? Out of the three cult categories, is it a live your life? Is it a watch your back? Or get the fuck out?
This is a tricky one because the monarchy is so old that it's hard to see it objectively, you know? And this is all to say nothing of like the fanaticism of the followers on the outside itself, you know, the fans. Yeah.
We're just talking about the family
itself. Yeah, the family. And I think that the fact that the followers on the outside are so fanatical can contribute to so much of that damage and that bullying really says something about what the royal family itself is. It is like this incredibly powerful and sometimes destructive thing.
But it could just be a toxic family.
Yeah. No.
Toxic, powerful family.
For sure. I want to say it's a watch your back.
Okay.
Because I do think that any small power abusive group that doesn't allow you to push back or independently think or move through the world is automatically culty in a way I think can be troubling. So my instinct is to say, watch your back.
Okay, interesting answer, and also very much affected my answer. Not in the same way that you'd think, but also in the exact same way that you'd think. Okay. And let me explain what that means.
Okay.
I originally wanted to say, don't think it's a cult at all.
Oh, okay.
But as you were talking, I started thinking about all of the employees of the royal family. Even though you're not part of the royal family still has like a huge cult under it, and they control a lot of people and they sign a lot of NDAs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what if that shit happened with Meghan, who is a public facing figure. Imagine what the fuck is happening with people on the inside.
It's like some Succession shit,
you
know?
It really is.
Like, who's being silenced?
Also, there are generations of families born into serving the royal family too. So that's like a whole other thing, in that like if you're the son of like their first lady or something
or whatever,
then you have to become that when you grow up.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Like, the roots of this thing go so deep.
Yeah. And in that case, I would kind of say it's a get the fuck out. I literally went from like it's not a cult at all to it's a get the fuck out. Another fact supporting that is that anyone who has gotten the fuck out doesn't go back.
They don't go back.
Completely exiled.
That's so true. That is so true.
And I'm pretty sure like if you really looked into it and did a deep dive, you would find some very sketchy stories of ex-employees of the royal family. Because it's not just the direct bloodline. It's everyone that surrounds them that's in the cult.
Stories that we'll never know.
We will never know. Okay, yeah, so that's how that's how I went from 0 to 100. If there are any princes out there who wanted to marry me, or princesses, I'm no longer available.
The answer is no.
That is our show, folks.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back with a new cult next week.
But in the meantime,
stay culty.
But not too culty. Sounds Like a Cult was created, produced, and edited by Amanda Montell and Issa Medina. Our theme music is by Casey Kolb, and our production assistant slash intern is Courtney Archard.
And if you like this episode, feel free to give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
Come and join me.
for the cultiest event of the season. Oh, hey! It sounds like a cult host Amanda here to invite you this April to New York, Boston, and Philly, where I'm putting on a culty variety show that you are not going to want to miss. This show, Cult Gathering Extravaganza, features guest appearances from the cult-followed podcasters behind Normal Gossip, Petty Crimes, Love Letters, and Strange Customs, plus drag burlesque performances, a musical guest, exclusive merch, a meet and greet, and more. And this just in, for the New York event, use the code CULTMAGIC, no spaces, at checkout for 10% off your ticket. A copy of my new book is also included in the price. It's going to be a hootenanny. Recruit your friends. Ticket links can be found at the link in our Instagram bio at Sounds Like a Cult Pod or on our website, soundslikeacult.com.